I don't even want to talk about how that.
These panels.
They don't really do anything audio wise.
That, oh, they don't?
No, but it just looks really good from the standpoint of like the visually. Lights. Yeah, looks so good. Looks so good. Have you ever heard of Wyze, W-Y-Z-E?
Uh-huh.
They're doing well. They're doing really, really well.
Yeah.
For sure.
The Wyze camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got them. That's not even plugged in, but it looks cool. I have that one. That's new. Like, all this stuff is given to me.
You had a couple.
Yep, that's
at the bottom of the step.
Yep, those are given. Dude, you get all kinds of free shit with TikTok. They send you, like, vacuum cleaners and weird stuff. I'm serious.
Hold on. Let's talk about the vacuum.
Yeah, cleaner. Yeah.
My wife, she needs to know about this because we go through some vacuum cleaners.
Do you clean the filters?
No, I don't clean anything.
Well, I mean, if she doesn't clean the filters, it's going to break.
I haven't used the vacuum in a while.
Do you know how to turn it on?
Yeah.
There's a switch somewhere.
So we've got one upstairs, one downstairs in the laundry room. We have the handheld jams. You learn now.
Those things always break.
Like the Dyson, you know, little things. We've been through 4 or 5 vacuum.
It's amazing. That's what this podcast is going to turn into, is the vacuum podcast. I wonder if they have those.
I think if you review vacuum, that's the home run. That's the guarantee.
I think we should consider that.
You're going to get a lot of traction, a lot of viewership, a lot of wider audience than you realize.
Probably ever.
Yeah.
Because it's not as niche as you would think.
What's a Dyson run? $600-$700.
Probably.
Man. And mm-hmm. then, you know, Samsung kind of got in the game under that. It's serious.
Pull that mic a little closer to you. That's amazing. That is awesome. It is you. It's me. It's YDT. It's season 3, episode 189 of a show, which pulls back the curtain, takes down the walls brick by brick, exposes the hearts of those caring for those. And we're exposing Andy's heart today. Andy, my buddy Andy. Good old Andy. Raggedy Ann and Andy. Did you ever get here? Did that ever come out?
Maybe as a little bit. As a
like maybe. That was about 30-something years ago.
Yeah. You're peeling back the curtain on that one.
Yeah, for sure. I remember whenever I was in kindergarten, they had Raggedy Ann on the bathroom stall and Andy on the bathroom stall. And we went in the same bathroom. So now, I mean, talk about being progressive.
It was a very forward thinking.
It was a very forward thinking show.
Oh my god,
it's so funny. Did you?
What, was this at your school or was this at?
This was in kindergarten at a private Catholic school.
Huh.
Uh huh. Yeah, I remember.
Was it like a lesson? What was the purpose of?
To go to the bathroom.
They were just helping out.
This is the bathroom
helping the cause.
Yeah. So instead of just like the boy. And then the girl with the dress, and now it's, you know, that's how it deciphered whether or not it's a male or female, or then you had the handicap accessible. It was a Raggedy Ann and Andy. That's all I remember. And I made a bunch of popsicle stick puppets. Nothing like a Catholic education.
There you go.
And look at us now.
Look at us. Look, here we go.
That's amazing.
Here we go.
Are you from? Where are you from?
So I was born in Columbus, Ohio, and then moved. My mother passed away when I was 1 year old, and my dad kind of picked up, wanted to raise my sister, Abby, and I, so he moved us to Bardstown, Kentucky, which is, you got some bourbon behind us.
Mm-hmm.
They make 95% of the world's bourbon is basically distributed and produced in Kentucky, and Bardstown makes the most. Well, I should say Jim Beam's Claremont, so it's like right outside of Bardstown, but it was a really, really cool place. I mean, everybody travels all around the world to go see, you know, do the bourbon trails and things like that. So that's where I grew up. And it was, I don't know, it was a very fun, like, it's a beautiful small town, just a nice place to grow up. But that's where I picked up Southern accent. And so, yeah.
Did you... And you went to school?
I went to school at Western Kentucky. I went to high school in Bardstown.
Yeah.
Went to school at Western Kentucky, was a big golfer. So I had a lot of golf scholarships all around the country out of high school. And I wanted to move to California, but my parents were kind of against it for a couple reasons. Financially, it was probably not the best decision, hindsight. So I went to Western.
I saw a man smoking crack in California on the street, just walking down the street. This is real. West Hollywood during Grammy week. I was driving. I look over and he's lighting this crack bowl pipe, whatever you call it. And I'm like, that's crack cocaine.
That's a one hitter. Right?
That was something. Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. They get paid like $1,200 a week or a month or something just to.
I've never been to San Francisco, but it seems like the more that I travel around the country, everybody who's been to San Francisco has told me the horror story of seeing somebody defecate on the sidewalk or something of that.
Or be offended easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm offended. Tom Segura always says about that.
One of the funeral directors I met told an interesting story. He was in Michigan. He told the story of somebody defecating on their car while he was in the car. So,
the world.
You never know. But honestly, it's something.
They say mothers know best. So it's good that you didn't go to California.
I mean, I just got back from L.A. Just specifically, it seems like everybody's targeting San Francisco. So either it's true or it's just... everybody is just jumping on the bandwagon.
I think there's some truth there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
I do.
Have you
been to San Fran?
I've been through San Fran. I just live vicariously through like the comedians. I was just referring to Tom Segura, who's saying that San Francisco are easily offended people.
Oh.
So if you're listening from San Francisco, I love you. Golden Gate Bridge. Woo!
Woo-hoo! You know, we were talking about college. The college I was heavily recruited by, it was a college called Holy Names, and they're in downtown Oakland. So I would have gotten to experience this firsthand had I went that route, but instead became a Hilltopper and went to WKU.
They're great. That school is great. I mean, I've seen even in the past, I guess I would say two decades, there's just been this massive growth, not only on the campus, the reputation of the school, the programs.
Yeah, when I went to Western, there was 8,500 students, and then after freshman year, it jumped up to 18,000. And the reason was the Tennessee lottery. There were some promises made that maybe weren't kept. So it was more expensive for a student to go to UT Knoxville considerably in-state and pay in-state Tennessee tuition than coming up to Western. So all these kids from Nashville that didn't get into Vanderbilt would come up to Western Kentucky. So you get, 45 minutes north. You can zip back home to see mom and dad, but get the experience to get, out of state. So it's kind of a nice blend. So Western blew up as far as.
Did you all notice that as students too? Just this massive population growth?
Yeah, I think it went from like 8,500 to like 12,000, 13,000. And then now it's upwards. I think they got like almost 20 some thousand kids, maybe 21, 22,000 kids. So they spent billions of dollars on the campus. I mean, it's a nice school. Like I need to get back there more often than I do, but just haven't been back in a long time.
I was going to ask that. When you were playing golf, like you would travel. How did that work playing golf for the school?
Yeah. So interesting story.
Did y'all pile in this van and drive?
Oh man. So they moved me in. I got into this dorm. It was like the premier flagship dorm. Like you shouldn't get in. We had our own bathrooms and like a grocery store in the bottom of our dorm. We had a tanning salon and like salon, like you had more stuff than other college kids. But so they wanted me to play golf for them. And then I got there and I realized there's a lot of work involved. You had to get up 6 a.m., go run, go to study sessions, class all day, team meetings afterwards, and then go to weight training and conditioning, another team meeting, do it again, repeat, rinse.
And no one's doing homework for golfers, are they?
Yeah. So it was, I didn't want to do it. So I basically didn't do it and said, I'm going to just focus on studies. And I was probably influenced and following, other directions and ladies around and things, but free time. Yeah. So I valued, being able to go and move, didn't want to be dedicating that much time to golf. So I went down there for that reason, but ended up pivoting and just, you know, being a history political science major.
And you're using your major SE very frequently in your now life, right?
That's
amazing. So, I majored in Spanish.
Yeah, history, political science.
That's awesome.
Moved on and changed majors, became a business administration major. So took the accounting, stats, all that fun stuff, and ended up getting my business degree, and then went back and got an MBA from Bellarmine. So
you were working on that not too long ago. I remember you were grinding on that.
Yeah, so it's very interesting to go back if you have not had a math or calculus class in 20 years, like shaking off the cobwebs. It was a little humbling. We had a lot of engineers in our program from like Ford, Toyota, UPS, and to see them struggle through it made me feel a little bit like, okay, I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
But they really push you, and in a good way. They push you to your limits, and the workload is just massive.
I remember we were FaceTiming one night. I don't remember why, but you're like in this, your office, I would assume, at your house.
Yep.
And the lights are out, but you have a lamp. It was like a lamp on.
Oh, yeah.
It was like dimly lit, and I'm like, I feel you, bud. I feel your pain, your sadness.
Yeah, I did it more so. One, I'm a big, continual, lifelong learner, right? And I wanted to, one, be a good example for my girls.
Two
just
girls.
To show them. Two daughters. And then two, just the business we're in, we're basically a finance company. And I really wanted to know, if I don't know something, I feel a little uneasy, uncomfortable. So I want to at least have a good grasp of a wealth of, you know, topics and knowledge so that I can contribute to whatever we're working on. And just the funeral industry, I felt like was really, really slow to change. And I wanted to be, get a good immersion and stay one step ahead as far as technology goes. But then actually just be able to look outside of like, where is the industry going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. And I want to know the nuts and bolts of how all these businesses actually work. And that's kind of why I went back and did the MBA route. Man, I highly recommend it. It was hell, but it was worth it.
Kudos to you. I remember doing my prereqs before mortuary school, and you had to do all of your accounting. And you know, we were just talking about me and how I flipped numbers. I did everything virtual. I did all of my stuff online, which I think, did you do that too? So
it's a most of the stuff was on site and then 40% online. So about 60-40, which I actually appreciated the on site.
That's how I learned. But I was all virtual, and it was painful to get through that.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got a business analytics class or, you know, just a tough class and they're doing calculus or something or stats, and the teacher on site can actually turn around and see your faces and be like, all right, nobody knows what I'm talking about here. Let me pause and redo this. Online, I'm just not a big fan of just online. I get that's where the world is now, but I'm old school.
And you're an old soul.
Old soul.
You were talking about this. Did you meet your better half at school? Did y'all meet at school?
I met at a Louisville UofL football game.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, she stalked pretty good.
No. That's awesome.
She, we hit it off through a mutual colleague. A girl that she grew up with I worked with off of Hurstbourne Lane, and she introduced us, and rest was history. Started Facebook chatting. And
yes.
Next thing you know, we're hanging out on the weekends, and she's awesome. She's my world.
Did she... You can say her name, or I don't want to say her name if I don't.
Who, Abby?
Yeah, I didn't want to say her name. The woman we shall not name. No, did she understand? Like, you're in this, we talked about it just for a second, but the funeral space, and for people who are listening, in the funeral space that I've found myself in, which is direct to serving families in the sense of you're arranging a funeral, you're in the weeds of grief and sadness and heaviness and weight and all of that. You are in the weeds of the heaviness and weight of making sure that those families are supported on the financial side by funding the funeral, but not so much the relationship there. More importantly, from the business side, it's with the funeral home and getting that funded. And this has a lot of, it seems like there's a big, not misconception, but people who follow, who listen to what it, this podcast and the stuff on TikTok, there are a lot of people who think that funerals are free still. It's insane.
Yeah.
And then I don't mean that to devalue anybody that's thinks that, but people are ignorant to that.
Sure.
And funerals are not free. And people have a lot of questions about, well, how does a funeral get paid for? How does this work? But where did you work before going to EFF, Express Funeral? And then what was that move? What caused that move to?
So I worked in corporate America, and you hit on some good stuff there, some eye-openers for myself included. But I worked in corporate America. It was a interesting education. I took, learned so much. I did that for about 6 years. We represented some of the Fortune 500 health insurance, property and casualty insurance companies. Can't really name who specifically I worked with, but you would know all the companies that I was representing. And basically what we did was I was essentially an attorney, would fight to get money that they paid out for claims improperly. And that helps cost containment. And I got a great education. I did not like the culture. I did not like the environment. I didn't like, you know, climbing the ladder of something that's already been built. So I wanted to be part of something, either A, own my own business and start something from the ground up, or be a part of a startup and really feel like I had an impact to get this company to where it was. So it was kind of an aha moment, and I was making great money. I mean, I had nothing. I still have lifelong friends that I made at the company, but took a step back, found this little startup in Southern Indiana, and I was like, you know, that's a cool idea. And I actually looked, I thought about becoming a financial advisor, and Merrill Lynch gave me a job offer, and Edward Jones gave me a job offer. And that I felt like, okay, you got the brand, but you're still building your own book of business. So you're still starting from the ground up. And I saw this company called Express Funeral Funding. I was like, what's this about? And took a massive pay cut to take a shot. And we kind of leaped all in, Abby and I did, and went from making really good money in corporate America to basically minimum wage is what I would classify it to. And it was a big, big risk, but I didn't know. Like, I never thought, like, oh, funeral space, you know, oh, you know, what's that about? I just saw a cool idea. And what the concept was is we process life insurance claims. We're a finance company. We help funerals keep their accounts receivable really low and help them process the life insurance company. And why it, when I first went in, I knew nothing about the business. And they explained to me that, hey, when a family pays for a funeral and they want to use a life insurance policy, it might take upwards of 6 months before that funeral home gets paid back by the life insurance carrier. And I was like, huh, I had no idea. I'm like, man, seems like it's a lot. And
that's a long time.
It's a long time. And then they're like, oh, in addition, here's all the administrative work you have to do. Here's all the claim forms. Here's all the documents. Here's the phone calls you have to actually sit on hold and verify and do all this work outside of being a funeral director and helping that family go through the worst time of their life. So I said, seems like a really good service. Seems like a really good need. Seems more affordable than if the family swipes a credit card. It's less cost to the family. So I was like, all right, this is a cool concept. It was pretty new. There was other funding companies out there, maybe like a dozen, but they were all pretty small companies too. So that's kind of how I got paired up with Express. I took a shot at it, and we had about 300 customers at that time. So much smaller than we do now. We have several thousand funeral homes around the country. And it's been an interesting ride, to say the least.
Yeah, you say, when you say finance company, people, okay, first they don't understand necessarily that the funeral, oh wow, I've got to pay for it, and then, oh wow, I've got to pay for it before the funeral takes place. Like, the days of shaking hands and saying, okay, you know, whenever you're crop Chuck's comes in and pay.
Bill will be in here with a check next week.
Yeah, so. The days of that, unfortunately, are gone.
Yeah.
And it's just a few bad apples ruin it, right? I mean, there are still really good people. And then a lot of the communities that you all assist and take care of, they're probably in the communities where Bill's word is good as gold. However, it's this new changing of the guard that you and I have both seen where the days of, hey, Bill, you can come in 2 weeks and pay, it's over.
Yeah.
But you talk about the finance aspect company. People, this isn't like a cash advance. This isn't like a check and go type finance company. So, ABC Bank or a real, like, let's say Wells Fargo or PNC Bank, they specialize in what they specialize in. They offer commercial loans. They offer personal loans, home loans, auto loans, etc. The funeral space is a very specific space. Yeah. And Express, you all understand it. It's not, explain how that process itself works from your all's end.
Sure. And I think something that people should know is that funeral homes were actually on a decline. When I first started with Express, there was north of 20,000 funeral homes around the country. That number decreased every year that I was in the space. And why is that? It's because the funeral homes couldn't afford to keep running, keep operating. So one of the factors, and there's a lot of factors, right?
Everybody, funeral profession is the only profession I know where you don't have to have business sense whatsoever because people are going to keep dying. And if you do a good job taking care of them, they're going to call you.
Yeah.
But then the business sense comes into play, and that's why they close down. Yeah. Is what I've said. So
yeah, and let me tell you, when you're a funeral home, you have a lot of bills. Everybody's got a handout. You know this. I don't, but I've learned a lot. I haven't ran a funeral home, but I see what the statement of goods, and I can only imagine, like, from just a vendor perspective. Imagine if you serve 20 families and 10 of them that come through the door for that month say, hey, I want to pay using life insurance. And let's just say, worst case scenario, that all of those policies, you're not going to get reimbursed for 6 months. Who can afford to float that service for 10 families? That's just in 1 month for 6 months. And the average is probably more like 90 days. But even so, you could have upwards of $200,000 on your accounts receivable as a very, very small funeral home. The average funeral home in America does about 125 calls a year. So
that's families served. That's 125 families in the community that call ABC Funeral Home to take care of their loved one. 125 is average.
Yeah. So if you're a small funeral home that serves a small town community, they cannot afford to wait on that money. They can't take advantage of their casket discounts. They can't pay their staff and give everybody wants to make more money. Inflation, that's the big thing in the media right now. So people want raises and things. So what we do, we facilitate advancing all that life insurance proceeds. It doesn't have to cost anything out of the pocket of the family. It doesn't have to cost the funeral home anything because the fee is charged out of the life insurance policy. We advance those funds and we get the funeral home paid. They can move forward on focusing what they do best. It's serving the family, and they're not tying up all these resources and waiting for that money. So it's a really simple process. Basically, it's one form that the family signs. Instead of the funeral home taking the assignment, we take the assignment contract against the policy, and we charge a nominal fee. It's less than if the family swipes a credit card.
Right.
So Visa and MasterCard, they charge interest. Ours is a fixed amount, and usually it's a little over $200 that's taken out of the policy. Mm-hmm. It's super nominal as far as the family is concerned. And, 99 out of 100 families are like, this is a no-brainer. I want to use this service. The one family says, no, I'll just write you a check, write you cash. Well, that's good for the funeral home too. So it's a pretty simple thing. And we actually, it's amazing because when I came into it, we would only process what was needed for the funeral or what was needed for the cemetery. But we started getting asked repeatedly from the family, hey, mom just passed away. I'm not going to have access to her bank account for, you know, probably a month or two, and I want to fly my sister in from out of town. Can I get some of that excess life insurance? Because we have this big policy sitting out here. Can I get, you know, access to some of that? And for years, we didn't do that. But now we actually can assist them. Like if they needed a few, you know, $1,000, I mean, it's going to cost them peanuts as far as our fees concerned. And we can have $1,000 in their hands tomorrow. So it's a great service.
That's called family pay.
Family pay. Yeah. Yeah. We get, we do thousands of these a year. I mean, thousands of them. And we get Christmas cards and thank you cards for families that, hey, when my mom passed away, I was going through the most difficult time of my life. And you guys helped me cope with that and not have to worry about the financial burden of, you know, dealing with all of these outside things and thoughts I was going through. But so that family pay, it means something.
It
and
does.
It's a PR for the funeral home.
The funeral home. And that's people who are listening and talking about this whole idea of money. Money is the worst conversation to have within a funeral setting, because you're experiencing grief and sadness and heaviness and weight. And the selection that you make, it costs money. And funeral, you can attest to this. Funeral directors are the worst salespeople in the world. And when it comes to even accepting, requesting, asking for money, would you agree with that statement overall?
It's definitely a pain point.
It is a pain point.
And the funeral director wants to be there to help these families. And they are, that's who they are to their core. I could never be a funeral director because I don't know if I have maybe I could. But I'm blown away with the funeral profession and how many good funeral directors are there to take care of these families. And they don't want to ask for money because they're in this helping mindset. So it's a tough question to ask. The flip side is, on the insurance perspective, we see funeral homes around the country that have had so many horror stories and nightmares that they would turn families away and say, hey, we can accept cash or we can accept a check or a credit card, but we cannot work with this insurance company because it's too big of a burden for us. So what does the family do? They opt for cremation in that because they don't have $6,000 or $7,000.
I mean, who does right now, especially?
And yeah.
And that's what I wanted to get to is what you all have afforded, not from a financial, but from a relief standpoint. There are all these funny I should probably use better words, but there are really sad, terrible stories across the country where people are just burdened with, the funeral director came up to me and said, at the funeral, I need $7,000 or we're not burying mama.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Oh, wow.
And you should look.
Really?
Yes.
I'll check it
yes.
out.
Yes. And so the you all represent... You all are B2B, business to business. So the funeral home is able to look like the rock stars, right? Absolutely. Representing or offering this product and this service. It also alleviates, like when the Smith family leave your care, it's all taken care of. You're not calling them and being like, hey, guy, you remember how you said you'd pay me and you didn't? There's not any of that back and forth. They're able to be with their family. You talk about the financial aspect in the arrangement room and only the arrangement room. And then from there, it's relatively smooth sailing.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. I mean, to have the peace of mind, when we send a funding confirmation, those funds have been direct wired or direct deposited right into the funeral home's bank account. And that family is aware of that this mom service is taken care of. So if they can rest assured and know that I'm good to go and we're taken care of. That is like a big deal, and it's probably not talked about very often, but used to be, maybe I'm wrong, but it used to be a system where that's Bill. I've known Bill for 30 years. He'll bring a check by here, and maybe they would, they probably would. And then slowly over time, it's now become
Bill Jr. or Bill the Third doesn't.
I'm gonna have to make payments, or you just never see him again. Maybe.
Oh, we have people that have said, "Oh, we filed the insurance ourselves." this is before EFF. These are sad stories, crazy stories. And you're like, well, they're like, well, when we get the check, we'll bring it in. Mm-mm, they don't.
You'll never see them.
They don't at all.
And that's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. Right. And I think this cuts out any opportunity or potential for a family member, for someone to either, I like to see the good in people and think that maybe they just overlooked that.
Right.
But it gives them no opportunity to have any type of mix up. The family, like you said, they know. And this process, the cool thing about it is for the longest of time, you hear the sob stories, the crazy stories of how funeral homes have had to file the insurance claims themselves, and it takes forever. When I started, there was at the first funeral home, there was like $350,000 or $80,000 in receivables.
Oh, wow.
And you know, Kay is sitting there just trying to file and process. And you would not believe, listener, you know, the overhead of keeping the lights on, the staff. It seems that every funeral home probably still has a very aggressive insurance where they cover and take care of their staff. And then you have all of the suit allowances and all that, the out of pocket Batesville or Matthews Aurora, they don't do payment plans for their caskets. They send that bill at the end of every month. Yeah. Next thing you know, if you don't pay the bill, they're not going to provide you caskets. And then
you
rot row. So it's this vicious circle. And people also say, oh, funeral homes are greedy, money hungry people. Well, I always say, and when I do videos about it, I say, I want to push back, because in all 50 states of the United States, you legally have to go through a licensed funeral provider in that state to have disposition, which is burial or cremation. It's not like the funeral home came up with that law, rule, regulation. And then when you come in, they, large in part, can control a lot of those costs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we verify that a policy is good, in good standing, it hasn't lapsed, there's no loan, it's not taxed, and we give that peace of mind to the family and say, hey, you've got $25,000 to play with. You make the decision on what we're going to do for mom or dad, but now you have the power and the decision making to be able to pick and choose what works best for your family. What we also see in the flip side of that is something that, you know, cremation's been on the rise, but we're starting to see a little bit where if there's $25,000 and they do mom's at need or $7,000. We're seeing some families that want to go ahead and use the excess funds to pre-plan and lock in another service so that their kids don't necessarily have to go through that process that they just went through with mom or dad. Nobody wants to talk about, you know, the end, right? I've been in the space. I haven't pre-arranged. I need to.
You need to.
But I need to. But nobody wants to talk about it until it happens, and to have that peace of mind to know, okay, I want to get this done so I don't have to worry about it until it's that time, I think is important. And I think the funeral profession is moving to having those conversations. It used to always be like, you know, later on in life, but I think it can be earlier in life too.
Yeah.
At a younger age.
I've seen that with TikTok. Whenever, you know, I post a video about prearranging and younger people our age are interested. We're in this day now where people want to know why, how, what. Whereas before, like you were just referring to, people were sissies when it comes to talking death. And it was usually primarily the woman, the wife, bringing in the husband, being like, oh, we gotta do it. You know, we gotta take care of it. People,
Merle, get
yeah,
in here.
In my side of it, it's been, and people are blown away by it. The level of it is so competitive in your space with tending to and caring for the funeral homes. Do you see this level of competition too, or not as much? Because you get to see the good side of the funeral professional.
Not as much. We don't have a ton of competition. There's probably 15 to 20 competitors in the space. You know, it's very capital intensive to operate our model. It's a tight model. The margins are very, very thin. When you're only making a little bit of money on each claim, it's a volume driven. So it's all a velocity. How quickly can we turn this money over? And The technical term is called factoring, and it's been in the railroad industry and other industries for years, all the way back to Egyptian time period. And basically, you're helping businesses stay afloat and stay in business, and you're somebody else's providing some capital and some protection to, you know, spread your risk out and so that you can continue to operate. So we don't see a lot of it because it's kind of hard to get into, and the information is very proprietary driven. There's 500 plus insurance companies out there. There's 50 different states. They all have different laws and regulations and forms and things that they need. So to just pick up and start it'd be a really tough process.
I bet.
You learn through the school of hard knocks, like what you can do and what you can't do. And if you can't do it, you're going to, you know, take it on the chin for that one.
You have a really cool, the hub, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's people, the way that the profession is going, finally more tech.
Yeah.
My gosh. When I started, I'm serious. They had a typewriter. Still a typewriter. Do you know the scanners where you lifted and then you put four physical pictures? We'd shut it and then you had to crop
the electric
each.
Electric type?
Yes.
Is it an electric type or actual?
Electrical scanner, the scanner itself for photos and making videos. And it was absurd. It's come a long way finally. I feel like everybody's white knuckled it though too in the profession. But you all have this hub and it's amazing because like on the iPhones, we would take a picture of that, upload it.
Yep.
And boom, it's like in process.
Yep.
And in process, I'm referring to ABC Insurance Company. We sent over the form that the family signed. The funeral itself is this much. This is asking, saying, hey, we want to get these proceeds for the funeral expense. And then EFF notifies, hey, it's in process.
Yep.
And then it's just like all along the way, you have all these notes associated with each person, each loved one's case.
Yeah, it's exactly.
How long did that take to build that?
So there's been three versions of the hub, and we were the first to, when I first started, to file any claim took about 4 to 8 pages of documents. And we took a step back and we're like, this is crazy, right? Why does it take so much paperwork for us to file a claim? So we went through the process of calling all these insurance companies, legal departments, and working it out with them. Hundreds of hours of putting this legwork in to simplify this to, at that time, it was about 2 pages. So we went from like 5, 6, 7 pages to 2 pages. And then we even got it down to 1 piece of paper. And now when we submit a claim, it's very few documents, typically 1 to 2 pages. Usually we need a copy of a death certificate. We'll do all the other paperwork for the funeral home. And I mean just to submit a claim. So with that progression, we said, we need to be able to do this online. We need to be able to get the technology that exists in so many other businesses and fields and just use that technology. And honestly, it was like, I don't think when we were first talking about an online system, there was pushback that, funeral directors will never use that. It's like, sometimes people don't know what they need until you provide it to them. So now I can honestly say about 60% of our funeral homes, everything online or through their smartphone. The other 40% still fax claims in, which is wild.
The medical field has to.
Yeah.
They still do everything fax-based because of HIPAA, but
yep.
40%, that is still, well, at least over 50.
Yeah. Yep.
That do tech. Okay.
Yeah. So, and they're digital fax now, but
wow.
I remember, you know, going back to 2015, we would call funeral homes and they would let us know, let me hang up here so I can plug my, they were on that dial up, right? They got to plug their fax machine in and stuff to fire that up. But it's come a long way. I mean, the technology, where it's going, AI and everything, it's quick. Now, what's interesting, the funeral home industry has been behind the times as far as technology, in my opinion.
That's not an opinion.
Don't beat me up on it anyway.
No, I think it's...
I think their minds are definitely... They're quick, catching up quickly. In just 5 years, I've seen funeral homes that don't have any software daily software to now they use a program that's in the cloud and things like that. But also, I think, what were we talking about? The transition of
tech. Yeah, the transition of tech. You all embracing it and doing your three versions of the hub and yeah.
Yeah, so we came out with the first version. It was terrible. Scrapped it. Second version, a little bit better. And this mm-hmm. third version, it's all in the cloud. And it's pretty slick stuff. We use all the latest and greatest that's out there in the space.
Well, whenever I think I was seeing two, right? Two. Yep. You all just released three. When?
2 years ago.
Oh, then yeah. I saw three. Yeah.
Yeah. You saw the latest. The version now is just upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a new, we'll never outgrow that.
I don't think.
Unless we outgrow, like.
It's amazing. You have all the insurance companies. It all auto-populates everything. It's pretty yummy and it's simple. It's ease of use. And that's what you need, especially if you still have 40% faxing still. But that sounds to me like you all are meeting people, the profession where they are, which is good. What's the pushback? I guess the big C word, it's change, is the pushback. For people who are prospective funeral home clients for you all, is that what it would be? Mostly is change?
Yeah, the two biggest things that we see why funeral home still files is they don't want to charge their families the fee, but they're the ones suffering. And what we see is if you were to go in certain states, in like say Texas or Florida, there's probably not a funeral home in the entire state that's not using a factoring company. But there's still areas of the country, this is a very new concept too. And they're grinding in through it and they're sitting on hold and they're paying these administrators to do all this paperwork. And then they're waiting on their money forever. And all because they're afraid to have that conversation with the family, say, hey, there's no guarantee this money's good. So we need that peace of mind. We have to have this underwriting company that does all this legwork so that we can go forward with the service. I think they just haven't quite got to that level yet. Fear of change, and maybe just education.
And not wanting people to get mad at them. This idea. When you go to Amazon and you swipe your card, they're charging not only taxes, but they're adding in
The fee.
Everything.
Yeah.
It's everywhere you go. And no one blinks an eye.
Nobody blinks an eye. I think, did I just go through Starbucks and see they had a little? No, I don't remember if it was Starbucks or not. But a little credit card processing fee. It's on everything now. And now they want, to tip and things like that. But it's wild to me how many. We're still reaching new audiences. It's amazing how many funeral directors still don't know that this service even exists.
Really?
So I think that's one of them. And then two, we've just always done it this way.
Oh, that's like I want to slap my face against every brick wall when I hear people say that. That's the death of.
Yeah.
When you say we've always done it this way.
Cringeworthy.
You have a
business school. That'd be like the worst thing you could ever
see. So awful. We've always done it this way. Oh, yeah. And that's why your business is cut in half. That's why you still have the carpet from 1972.
Yeah.
You have a really good like disposition about you where you're able to just kind of laugh it off because I don't know, at the end of the day, you have 20,000 funeral homes that are potential customers. Right?
Yep.
That's amazing. Cause you all have, that means that the sky's the limit for you all from a growth perspective.
I hope so. You never know. And we do other services. We're affiliated with, a larger organization that has several brands in the funeral space. And it's hard to really predict exactly what's going to happen. Rise Cremation's been something to witness over the last few years. And you've seen this firsthand more than me, myself. I'm a firm believer that there will be some celebration. There will be some product that when somebody loses a loved one, there's going to be something to fill that void. There's going to be some celebration. There's going to be some event. And I don't think that's going to change for indefinitely. I just don't. I think the day that, I lose my dad, or you know, I lose a loved one, and we just go about it. Oh, that's just a Tuesday. I can't see that ever happening.
Never.
Now, maybe I'm naive to it.
Never.
But there's going to be something to fill that, right? Now, is it the traditional funeral sense, or is it an evolved form? I think it will evolve over time, and I hope that what we provide is it allows families to make the best decision for what fits them. If they want a freaking Viking funeral,
that'd be amazing.
You got the funds to do it. You don't just have to do a direct cremation because mm-hmm. that funeral director doesn't want to fool with that life insurance. We provide that ease that the family can pick out what they want. Dad, we got to do something special for him. I mean, I want to give him the Viking funeral. Yeah. So, boom, let's
That'd be
go.
Amazing.
Bow and arrow, send me out there.
And I agree with you. There is never going to be a time where people don't want or don't have a celebration of sorts, whatever that may be. It might not be, you know, the old Victoria home on the corner that they've always gone to. That old Victorian home on the corner might have to pivot as well to provide that unique experience, yet they'll still, families will want it. And I was thinking just now about how people listening, they obviously, you know, there's some marketing plots where they say, call your business and tell them that you want. But really, if you have a funeral home in your community, probably have seven of them and you have a population of 1,200. But if there's a funeral home that you've always used, ask them if they have if they work with EFF, you all, right? Sure. Because that is, there's value for that family. Like Absolutely. We've just talked about for the past however long. I mean, that is how we push and progress this profession, is these educated people, community members who we are serving, whether directly or indirectly in your case, educating them so that they can make educated decisions and then challenge those funeral homes to really step up their game, you know? How many funeral homes do you still see the Rolodex, right?
Oh my gosh.
It's insane.
The claim form filing collapse.
Amazing.
We see some, you know, you see it, you know, but
it's amazing.
It's gonna be an interesting ride the next 5 or 10 years because, you know, cremation was nothing, you know, 10 years ago. And now I think it's twofold. I think it's an access to capital is a big thing, and hopefully we can fill that void by advancing that. But then also, you know, I saw a stat that from Forbes, so it's a pretty credible source, mm-hmm. that said 6 out of 10 Americans don't have $500 in their bank account in the event of an emergency. And I fact-checked it. Like, I think our marketing department came across it, and I was like, that 6 out of 10, that just seems crazy. So I looked and it was like CNN, Fox News, MSNBC. It was all like 3 or 4 different sources basically affirmed the same percentage. And I was like, man, that's crazy. How can we expect someone to pay for a $7,000 to $10,000 service? And that's the average according to, you know, NFDA. But how can we expect them to pay that when they don't have $500 in their bank account? So
we need to send them to some what's it called, Dave Ramsey courses.
yeah. And I think that's a big commitment, right? So I think it's super important with one, maybe the insurance side of it, families plan from a younger perspective. You see, whole life was a big thing in the past, but now pre-need is huge, but it's not to the level where I think it's going to protect the long term. I mean, I don't know. What's your perspective on traditional service versus cremation?
I think cremation is we're trendy. People are trendy, and within music, the music space, you have sounds that are cyclical. So, you know, we're pulling the '80s sounds. They're coming, you know, are back, or they have been back. It's going to be that way. You're going to have this supply and demand with cremation, for instance, and people don't know what they don't know. And I think that the funeral professionals did a hell of a job of shooting themselves in the foot too. Whenever, you know, what is the thing that's marketed? Direct cremation. So when people call, and if they want cremation, they don't know anything else to call it but direct. So funeral homes are like, oh, sure, that's $3,000. Instead of saying, oh, sure, cremation. So we'll have a visitation for mom where she's physically present and then the cremation. So you start to thought, I think that it's going to be a demand, like the supply, the demand, the financial aspect. They're going to raise the prices and then it'll be one of those things that people are still going to choose cremation. But I think full service is going to come back more around.
If there was, if money wasn't an option, do you think, I mean, what do you think most families would elect to keep, like if money was not?
I think that it would be more traditional. I think that most of the United States is a traditional place and space, really. I mean, where we are is, my gosh, traditional through and through.
Yeah.
And cremation, where we are, I think cremation is chosen more so because of the finance aspect. It's not like, you know, I want cremation. Like, I want to be burned. I don't know. I don't know about you, but I want something ridiculously elaborate. I want 3 weeks of grieving. I want a parade. Multi-city parade. That's awesome. Do you
you see some, well, you know, we serve some Haitian funeral homes in Florida and South Florida. And it is a celebration. I mean, it is a huge deal. So you do see these. It's such a different from, you know, what we see like the Pacific Northwest versus New England states. And I'm always intrigued by what's out there. What's the demand from the, you know, public? And I'm not convinced that all the time the families are going cremation because that's what they prefer, right? So I'm not solely I'm convinced that that's what the family actually wanted, but I think it's what they had to do.
I also think it's an education thing too. I think that it goes back to going in the arrangement room with the funeral director and being okay to talk about money, or to be okay to talk about, well, sure, how about this? Have you thought about this? Just why not listen? And I'm not saying that they don't, but there are maybe opportunities to listen better to families, to not just go through this templatized experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Starting younger.
Starting,
you know, pre-arrange early. Mm-hmm. You know, putting some money aside.
That's very important to do. You're never too young to pre-plan, and you need to pre-plan.
I need to.
So it's interesting because you go from, I don't want to say cush job, but from a financially, you're set, and then you're like, yeah, I'll take this leap. But it sounds to me like you took something that you believed in that really spoke to, you know, the heart of something.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you, we go to conventions, funeral conventions all around the country.
Super fun.
It sounds weird, right? And, you know.
But I'll tell you all, Andy and Dee are the lives of the party. It's true. I mean, my gosh.
We're older now, so we're less fun, but we're still fun. But no, I mean, the funeral conventions, when I first went to my first convention, it was NFDA Nashville, I believe.
Was that the one that I was at?
This would have been like 2012.
No, I mean, so, I was
or
not
maybe
there.
It was Chicago. I can't remember. It's going back. I knew Indy and Philly. They were early on. Indianapolis and Philadelphia were super early NFDAs. But you go to a convention, you see what's new in the funeral space, right? That's the purpose to go if you're in the funeral space. And you know, we were a vendor, so we're touting our product. So I never really thought about the service side of it for several years. I know that. I mean, that sounds awful, right? Like, you're not thinking about it. I'm looking at it as like just growing a customer base truly as a business perspective. And what started to happen as the more I went to more conventions and traveled and started meeting more funeral directors and seeing the amazing things that they have done for their community. I know that sounds super cliche, but it is the tightest community and like the most loving community that I've ever seen. And I feel like I do have a little part of that in that we are helping families now. And I don't know if I could go to another job and not feel or have the same purpose that I do feel now. And I never felt that for a couple of years. So it took a little while to open my eyes and see, look at what, you know, you went through. And, you know, until you almost lose a loved one, it kind of starts peeling back the layers. You're like, oh, I know that funeral home. We work with that funeral home. They just took care of my aunt. You know, that stuff starts to hit home, and you're like, wow, that is an impact on the community. And it's a cool industry. I mean, it really, really is the tight-knit, you know, industry, community. And there's a lot of love around it.
There is. There's a lot of love in the profession. And I think it's awesome that there's something beautiful about it going largely unchanged for two centuries.
Yeah.
Because it's built around tradition and kindness and compassion. And I've said this and I mean it. And I believe you can attest now too, but when you put your 2 feet on the floor in the morning or at night, and if you're a funeral director or someone that's on call, knowing that you're doing something outside of yourself for someone else and this selflessness, that's truly living. Yeah. I feel that's purposeful. And it's pretty cool to know that you're helping. And I hope that you're reminded, and even in this moment, to know that if you're in thousands of homes and these homes are taking care of thousands of loved ones, that you have a part in alleviating a burden, if only a little. Yeah. That's pretty profound.
It really is. You know, I think you told me a story one time about serving a family and they just lost a young kids. Maybe it was an auto accident or something. And it registered with me. I think we were out in Phoenix at that time, and you told me the story, and I just thought about it, and I'm like, man, my gosh, like, what it must be like to be serving that family. I wasn't putting myself in the family situation, because tragedy happens everywhere, but I was thinking about it from the funeral director's perspective and what you were going through serving that family. And I just, that's about as humbling of a career path as I feel like anybody could ever take. You know, funeral directors don't make a lot of money. So you got to be a special, unique person to want to get in the profession and truly serve just from day one. You know, I don't know too many people that just wake up and say, I want to be a funeral director.
Yay, sadness.
And
yay.
They're out there. You know, they're out there. And right. It's usually mom or dad and grandpa was. It's multi-generational. Right. They have the passion. They've been, you know, grown up in the space. And there's some that have been in the space but have been intrigued by it. But I think large, you know, all in large, I'd say most people don't think about being in this space. Because I tell people what I do, and they're like, huh, you're in the funeral space.
Right.
And it's the reactions are...
What's the craziest thing you've ever heard? What's, you know, you get those stories all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. But I think it solidifies this understanding that we will be remembered for something, and choose good, be kind, because we will all one day die.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's about what you do right now, and it's obvious what you all are doing. It's pretty amazing. I've been a big fan of what you all are doing for a long time, and I think it's good that you're able to tell, hey, yes, things cost money. The funeral does cost money. However, there are products, there are services that are available that will help alleviate that burden.
Absolutely.
And I think it's important for people who are listening to know that EFF exists, and your funeral home down the street may or may not work alongside EFF. If they do not, then make sure that they know that you know about EFF, because it's people like Andy, it's people like Dee, it's those individuals who are working behind the scenes to make sure that, you know, funds are getting dispersed on a quick, rapid rate so that you all can have a service that's meaningful for someone that you love. Pretty awesome, man.
Thanks.
Man, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, we're grateful to be a part of it.
If people want to learn more, I mean, people actually, come to find out, people look at funeral websites like crazy. But yes, people love going, people love the macabre. They love this weird, I don't know, it's like the train wreck. You can't help but not watch the train wreck.
Yeah.
Right? But I was going to say, where can people find you? People Express has a very beautiful website.
Yeah. No, I guess I don't think about that. But it seems like, I wonder if social media has probably drove some traffic to these websites too. Because, you know, they see a tragedy, something gets posted on Facebook, and then everybody's then, where's the next stop? Try to get a little details on that, you know, so that makes sense.
People click around websites all the time. So expressfuneralfunding.com is where you find old Andy boy here.
Yep. Check us out.
Absolutely.
There it is.
That's awesome. I'm grateful for you, man. It's been awesome to be not only colleagues on the business side, but become friends, and what you've afforded and offered the funeral homes and the families has been impeccable. So I appreciate that, man, very much.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me on here.
Yeah.
Feel free to send me an email if anybody's got any questions.
Absolutely. We'll link all that in the show notes. Just like freedom ain't free, neither are funerals. So be sure, you're never too young to pre-plan. You're never too young to get your wishes on paper. And do know that you need to be prepared and planned. And there are services like AFF, Express Funeral Funding, that help with that.